From the Rams studio, connected by AT&T, welcome to Between the Horns. It's November 15th.
Why are you shouting?
Am I shouting?
Yes.
I'm excited,
you're talking
man.
To the live studio audience of one. It's me and you in
does
here.
Does Matt even really count
yes, he does.
As one as
he
the audience count. Because he's
Hi,
the
Matt.
Producer?
Hello.
See? Hi, Matt. Yeah,
we're going to make him
see
talk
you again.
A lot.
Yeah. The Rams are 7-2
yeah.
after that 33-7 victory over the Houston Texans.
Ooh, nail-biter.
It kind of was until it wasn't.
It was right? a nail-biter. You know what I kept thinking? Wow, thank God Deshaun Watson's not here.
Yeah, me too.
During that slow start, if he's putting up points, you could be in trouble in that game.
Yeah, it's true.
Tom Savage got into a rhythm, made things difficult. But once the Rams offense, got going, you see what they can do. They can score from almost anywhere.
Right. Yeah. Well, they scored from 94 yards out, longest play from scrimmage since 1964.
1964. Yeah. I wasn't even born yet. Yeah, that predates me. Before you start the old jokes. Yeah. Wow, it's been that long.
It's been that long.
Yeah.
And that's pretty crazy. I mean, I was thinking about it, you know, when you were playing and, you know, you got guys like Marshall, Torrey, and Isaac and Kurt, and he's launching the ball everywhere, and he never launched it for 94 yards. But he probably almost never had to. You know, when you think about
maybe the guys got caught. I don't know. I mean, but Mike Martz, Dick Vermeil back in the day, I'm sure they dialed up a pass where your quarterback is standing in his own end zone before he lets it go. So, great route, great deception, great design on the play, great catch and carry by Rob Woods to get it in the end zone. Tremendous. That stuff goes around the National Football League. That's the stuff that, like we said, that's an Ambien moment. Yeah, that's the stuff that keeps you up at night. I'm serious.
Oh.
For defensive coordinators. I'm serious.
Isn't an Ambien the opposite? Like, I understand you're saying you have to take an Ambien in order to go to sleep.
That you can't
sleep. Worried about.
It's going to stay with you.
Yeah.
I mean, when you think about your defense and your pass rush or your coverage unit, because look, coaches know more about their team than anyone else. So imagine if you had a corner with a hammy and you see that on tape. Oh boy.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it makes you have to worry and be concerned about something else from the Rams.
Well, listen, Robert Woods now has had two really, really good weeks in a row. First time he's ever had back-to-back weeks with two touchdowns.
Right.
So I think
171 and it's a good week.
Yeah.
You're a tough critic.
I said
that is a fantastic week.
Listen, how many times did you say
eight catches? Do the math on that.
How many?
What's the average? Yes, here, look, it's right there.
I know it's right there. I don't have to do it.
What does that say?
21.4.
That's not good. That's great.
I said, how many reallys did I put in front of the good?
Just go ahead and say great.
Okay, he's had two great weeks.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah. Career weeks, if you will.
Right.
Since I'm not, apparently I'm not being effusive enough in my praise.
Look in the camera and give the man his props.
Robert Woods, this is me giving you your props.
Thank you.
Because you've earned it.
Right.
Oh, is that good enough for you?
I had to beat it out of him though, but go ahead.
Oh my goodness.
Anyway,
no,
go ahead.
I was about to go into this nice little, I have all these notes right there on how good Robert Woods is.
Are any of those notes relevant?
Yes, unlike last week,
right, go ahead.
Where you didn't like the wins discussion. But Robert Woods, I mean, every time you bring up Robert Woods, either to guys like Jared Goff, Sammy Watkins, they talk about how he is a leader for this offense.
Oh, my God.
And,
is he a pro?
Yeah. Right. And so we always talk about Andrew Whitworth being this really good free agent signing for the Rams, and he is. And I've been saying this, you know, it's not like I want to take anything away from Andrew Whitworth.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you also have to put Robert Woods in that conversation of being a pro's pro, as McVay likes to say, and being somebody who can be counted on week in and week out, both on the field and off the field.
You know, it's funny. You love basketball as much as I do, especially the NBA. And guys just know their role on a football team. Like playing with LeBron, know where your spots are, where you're going to get shots.
Yes.
What LeBron's going to do and where I can get my shots. I think Robert Woods really understands this offense and what Sean McVay is trying to do and where he can pick the shots. So you've been looking for someone that can take the top off the defense. We have been hoping, I guess, beyond hope. Can we say praying? That it's Sammy Watkins. It could have been Robert Woods this whole time.
Yeah.
I think he's got speed to get down the field. You saw that. But he can go from possession, a guy that's picking up first downs in the middle of the field versus linebackers, where he knows he's going to take a pop, to a guy that's a vertical threat like that. So he could be the guy. We talked about Whitworth being the midseason MVP. He could be the MVP for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
If this offense keeps churning the way we think it's going to churn. And those plays are going to open up. Maybe not from 94, but definitely you're going to have opportunities for big plays.
Exactly, and he's had those chunk plays, those intermediate plays, but I think now when you see him go on the deep post route like he does, and like he did, and it's not Sammy Watkins, it's Sammy Watkins 1 week, and then the next week it's Robert Woods. Boy, you talk about ambient moments. I mean, you have to continue to think about who the Rams can use next.
Right.
Because they just keep showing that there are so many different threats, so many different weapons that they have that can make plays from anywhere on the field.
I do know from a traditional, I'm a guy that came up in a 4-3, high school, college, pro. The biggest Achilles heel to any 4-3 has always been tight ends. So Tyler Higbee, Gerald Everett, this week could be the guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you think about play action and what the Rams like to do, the guys that are usually open right behind you are going to be those tight ends. If you're on the road in a hostile environment like Minnesota where they've got the benefit of crowd noise and they're getting after your quarterback, who's always open? Those tight ends.
Right.
Especially guys that can make something, small gains into big gains. So, look, week to week, it's going to change depending on who you play. The next time you face a team like Houston, a 3-4 multiple type team, it could be Sammy Watkins. But just knowing that Robert Woods has that sort of ability, it just opens up the playing field for everyone else as well, including himself.
Yes, it does. So right now, Robert Woods has 39 receptions, 622 yards. He's tied for the team lead with four touchdowns, and those yards and receptions, those lead the team right now. He's actually on pace for just over 1,100 yards on the season, which would be the most since, I think, Torrey Holton, 07. I think he had 1,189 in there. So I think you said this a long time ago. It might have even been in March when the signing was announced, and we did a podcast right that same day. And you said, I believe, that we don't know exactly who Robert Woods can be because of the quarterbacks he's been playing with.
Right. We've seen him. You watch him in Buffalo, and, I mean, you see the same things. He blocks. He's willing. He runs great routes. But, you know, the ball just didn't travel to him.
Right.
That could have been a function of the offense and who's throwing the football, who's making those decisions.
Yes.
But you like what he does. You say, hey, look, if you have a quarterback that can actually understand and find him in the passing routes, possibly he could be a big play receiver. I think you're starting to see some of that now.
Yes, and that sort of goes back to, you know, people quite being like, oh, man, why are you signing Robert Woods for that? You know,
who are you talking to, Miles?
There are people who said it.
I haven't met anyone that said
really?
That.
Really?
No one said that to me at all.
Well, they said it to me, and they said it, I mean,
who
I see it on Twitter.
To?
I know, I
Good
guess
Lord.
I need to. I
Cut
need
these to, people out. Man. What are you doing?
I need to pick my friends better.
All these naysayers. Come on, man.
I mean, it's not necessarily naysayers. It's people who would question something with a rookie head coach. I'm saying all the way back
to
March.
So I guess
March.
They like 2016's receiving corps.
Well,
I'm just saying.
I
mean, I
don't think
as soon as you signed Robert Woods, you got better.
I know. I know that. Right. You know that. Right. But I think people were thinking, okay, why Robert Woods for for that amount of money, for that length of time, whatnot. But I think now, and I don't know that anybody would question that. Especially because I brought up that point.
You had a couple of guys where you knew they couldn't catch.
Yes, I know. I know, and they're elsewhere still not catching.
Robert Woods had a lot of potential. We knew about these guys.
Yes,
right.
Exactly. Yeah. But I think, again, it's now looks like it, you know, could turn into a career year for Robert Woods. Over the next couple of games at some point, he's probably going to eclipse that career high, 699 yards that he's had. He had that in Buffalo his second year, I guess that was 2014, and he also had a career high of 5 touchdowns in that year. So if he stays healthy and everything continues the way it has, Robert Woods is definitely going to have a career year for the
Rams. Yeah, he's been great. He's been great for Jared. He's been great for the offense. Been great for Sean McVay. Two veteran guys like it. One running routes and one protecting the quarterback.
Whitworth
and Woods. I mean, that's two great additions to your offense.
Well, you talk about setting the tone, and obviously Robert Woods is one of those guys, but Andrew Whitworth, I think, we know, does that too. And last week on Sammy Watkins' touchdown, you know, he's going down the field, he's blocking two defensive backs. That right there, to me, is really setting the tone.
Yeah, you know, there was a moment in New York, I don't think we talked about this, it was right before halftime, and I think the Rams had kicked a field goal, and there was a little bit of a scrum, It had got chippy. Remember, it was getting chippy.
Yes, it was
a little bit
chippy,
of a scrum going into the locker room. And, you know, I think the Giants wanted to kind of goon it up because, you know, they're upset. They're frustrated.
Right.
They got their own problems. So,
yeah,
I mean.
And they're getting their butts kicked.
Natural reaction is, let's just start fighting. I'm serious. I mean, I know. Been there. Been on those teams where you're just frustrated. The first guy I saw waving people to the locker room was Andrew Whitworth. Mm-hmm. Like, don't even worry about them. Move on.
Yeah.
I mean, not jump in, pull your guy out, act crazy, do what Marshawn Lynch did. No. Wave guys to the locker room. Very professional. In a calm way.
Yeah.
Not yelling. Just move on. Move on. Move on. We got bigger fish to fry than this.
Yes.
I thought that was cool. See, that's beyond the field stuff that I like out of Andrew Whitworth.
Yeah.
That stuff that coaches can't help you with. That's player-driven right there.
Well, I think one thing that McVay has talked about over the course of the year consistently is that he can sometimes go to Andrew Whitworth and run an idea by him or, you know, just ask a question and Andrew Whitworth can come back with an answer and maybe you don't necessarily think about implementing it that way, but it's something about Whitworth's, I don't know, presence and the way he can deliver a message that's not, like he's trying to preach to you.
Yeah.
And he's not just going to come to you and say, you know, hey, I know we should do this.
Right.
But it's the way that Whitworth presents his ideas is just, it's a way that is conducive to success.
Well, I just remember, and look, I'm on the field most of the time.
Right.
But just listening to my coaches, Dick Vermeil, talk to Orlando or talk around Orlando Pace, and he'll just give them some feedback like, yeah, I got this guy. Go ahead and do what you got to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to do something on the opposite side, flood this, do whatever, I can handle this guy by myself one-on-one. You don't have to worry about protection. So if you're getting that same sort of feedback from Whitworth, it's only going to make you a better offense.
Mm-hmm.
We got this here. Even if they run a stunt and a twist and a blitz, and I got one guy, we'll be fine, coach. Do what you got to do. I'll take care of it. They'll never touch the quarterback. So when you get that sort of feedback from your offensive lineman, your left tackle in particular, everyone's confidence grows.
Absolutely.
Play calling and execution.
And I think the guys next to him, too. There was a sequence, and this might have been on that same driver. No, it was one before. But with Roger Saffold at left guard, where he was just eating pancakes. I mean, he was just flattening guys on that defense. And I think part of Saffold's confidence right now could be coming from the fact that you've got Whitworth beside you who is playing at such a high level.
Saffold would be serving pancakes, not eating them. The D-line would be eating the pancakes when you're pancaking people.
You're pancaking you're serving pancakes. I'm sorry. I don't know my lingo.
It's been a long year for Miles. No, I'm with you. But watching him, I think it's been great for Roger Saffold to line up next to Andrew Whitworth because we have talked about this for years. Even last year and the year before, we weren't sure if Roger Saffold wasn't your best left tackle. And he was playing guard.
Right. No, it's true. Right. Well, but I think
that discussion is over.
It is. Right. But we saw that last year when he would come in at left tackle, he would sort of stabilize that position. Mm-hmm. And that was what was going on in the first half, if you remember, of the New Orleans game.
Yeah. Right.
And then he left that game with an injury.
Right.
And Andrew Donnell came in, and it still wasn't that bad.
So just imagine if you're Roger Saffold, you got to know everything because in a moment's notice, you could be here, or there.
Right.
Right? So now you've got Whitworth here. All I'm going to be is a left guard, and I know this. And I can just maximize that position. I think that's what you're seeing. And the right side is starting to come along, too.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's been some good things. Just note on Roger Saffold. Rams have not practiced yet as we record this, but McVay did say that even though Saffold left the game and did not return with an ankle injury, that's a minor ankle sprain, he should be fine.
He's 7-2. He's going to play with a bloody stump if he has to. You know what he's gone through?
Bloody
Come on.
Stump.
You know what he's gone through?
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is why when I saw that injury and then I saw that he didn't return, you know, on some level, you feel personally like, oh my gosh, I hope this is not serious. I hope this is not major because you understand what this means to the entire team, but especially a guy like Saffold who has been here for so long.
Right. I think he'll be fine. And look, when a guy has an ankle, you know, they give you the official word, it's an ankle questionable, and then you look over and he's standing up, well, he's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, this is precaution.
Right. Yeah. You can see that.
Ankle and he's sitting down with no shoe on?
Yes.
That's a problem.
Right.
He's standing right there.
I didn't see him standing right there. You're on the field, I'm not. I was writing, okay? Especially at that time, like, there had been like this barrage of touchdowns because they're trying to break Tom Savage in half and intercepting passes and Fair Cooper's got a nice.
I'm glad you brought that up.
What?
Why would you ever want to make Aaron Donald bad?
Oh,
he's already going to beat you. Even if he's even kill, his pulse never rises, he's still going to beat you. He's that good. But if you make him mad, he can ruin your season.
Yeah.
Yeah, if he just decides to pile drive your quarterback, he's going to get there regardless. But if you make him mad, end your season.
You're really going to have issues.
Yeah. Well, that quarterback he gets to is going to have issues.
Right.
Yeah, I always tell the guys, like, if you make him mad, it's not going to be you that pays. It's the guy behind you. Yeah. Yeah.
What did you see that made him mad?
Nothing. Just when he, you know, guys, they give him a little extra shove sometimes.
Oh, okay.
It's starting to die down a little bit because, you know, he's rounded into form. But people that, like, shove him in the back or try to give him the business, I'm like, why? Why would you ever want to make him mad?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Because this is a guy who has now ended an opponent's opening drive with a strip sack 2 weeks in a row.
And that's when he's got a smile on his face. Imagine when he's mad.
Yeah, right. That's just at the beginning of the game, right? Like, who does that, though?
He may get the ball and take the arm with it. Well, I'm serious.
He did that to Justin Forsett once.
See? Right.
He did that to Justin Forsett
That was a rough game.
That was in 2015.
Oh, yeah.
That was the fastest diagnosis of an injury I think I ever recall in my career covering the Rams.
His arm looked like Jenga. It went different directions. Yeah, it was bad.
But Aaron Donald, I do want to talk about this what he's been able to do over the last 2 weeks, ending opponents' drives in the way that he has. That is the first time in franchise history that that's ever happened, first of all. And I know that when we talk about Aaron Donald, sometimes it gets into ho-hum territory, but he still has 4 sacks over the last 4 games, and 1 in each of the last 4 games, and he has 3 forced fumbles in that time. So you can say that, you know, this is the kind of stuff we expect out of Aaron Donald, but I think it is still worth noting just how special it is.
Big time. And, you know, look, he's going to give you everything he's got every single game. That's in his job description. Raise unholy hell on the offense for as long as you possibly can.
Right.
And Michael Brockers has taken on that same mantle. He is playing inspired ball.
Yes.
So those two guys in the middle are just getting incredible push. One push, one skill. I do wish that you had a healthy Quinn. I do wish that you had 100% Connor Barwin. Because when you get those edge guys up the field where that quarterback is stuck in the kill zone in the box, there's nowhere to go but down.
Right.
And this is the reason. When Aaron Donald's playing like this, that every other NFC West team has guard on their draft board. Because you're going to have to keep drafting people to stop this guy. And sometimes you just don't have enough. The guy he went around in Houston is probably their best guard. Uh-huh. Or at least the guy they felt the best about stopping him. And the first play,
boom.
And that's happened week in and week out. So at some point, you're going to start to see the offensive line slide more. You saw that early. And the quarterbacks move more. So this is what I mean about edge pressure and edge guys to keep that quarterback in the pocket so his rush isn't wasted.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or he's, you know, constantly in chase mode, chasing, you know, 15, 16 yards just to put a hand on the quarterback instead of putting his body on him.
Right. And that makes a lot of sense. I think one thing you brought up, how not having a healthy Quinn and then Connor Barwin goes out, he comes back in the game, fortunately. But I think you could tell. And sometimes the way Houston was doing, where they were doubling Michael Brockers and Aaron Donald at the same time, that you might not have that same kind of juice on the outside as you would really like.
I liked what 50 brought the team.
Oh, heck yeah.
Go ahead. Your guy.
Yeah.
I was going to let you crow. Go ahead.
Well, no. I mean, I've been saying it
Samson
for a long time.
Samson brought it. Come on, man.
I said it, you know, after we saw him the first day of training camp. And it was unfortunate because it was the first day of pads in training camp, I should say. And it was unfortunate because he suffered a hamstring injury in that practice. But I'll tell you, he is one of the best competitors I saw ever in that special teams drill.
Yeah.
We talked about it then. And I've been waiting sort of to see what he can do on the defense. And when he got in and he got a chance, man, he brought
it. He brought it off the edge.
He
did. He played really well. So I'm glad guys like him are starting to come along, you know, towards the end of the year. Because,
you
know,
what you want.
Some of the older guys, the veteran guys, you know, are going to take some plays off or take some reps off, and you know the defense can have a drop. So as long as those young players know what they're doing and can make plays at the same time, your defense doesn't lose a thing.
Well, the thing I thought was interesting was on that sack fumble that Abukam had in late in the third quarter, and it was right after the Rams had just gotten back on the board with Sammy Watkins' touchdown. And this is literally the first play from scrimmage, right? So you leave Abukam unblocked on the right side of the offense.
Football's easy when you're not blocked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you can say, And so I think you can say, well, he was unblocked. And it's like, all right, yeah, he might have been unblocked. But what do you do when you're unblocked?
He's smart. Went right to the quarterback.
Yes.
Yeah.
You go right there, you make the play, you get the ball out. So, you know, again, you can say, well, he wasn't fighting through, he didn't have to do blah, blah, blah. But like, yeah, but.
Yeah.
What else are you supposed to do but that?
Go after the quarterback.
Exactly. It's the same as saying, oh, well, you beat a team 51-17, but who are they? It's like, well, you still scored 50. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, it's that situation.
They're getting paid, too.
Yes, they're getting paid, too, and if they're going to not scheme against you, boom.
Go ahead and make the play.
Make the play.
Your next sack won't be as easy, probably.
Right.
Yeah, your next 10 sacks won't be that easy.
Probably not.
And now you're a mark for screens when they see you coming off the edge like that.
Fair.
They think they can get one around you. That's the thing that changes, like with Connor Barwin and a Quinn versus a young guy like Samson Ebukam. They can tell the difference between pass and screen in a blink. Yeah, I mean, some young guys, when they get their first sack, they want their second one, they want their third. So you become a mark for a screen. And I'm sure that's being repped right now.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
And that's something that, you know, Wade Phillips has been in this league for 40 years. They know how to coach.
I was a sucker for a draw for years.
Really?
Oh, my God. As soon as you open I'm going. That's a sack. That's a draw. That's a draw. He's still running. Please get him. Oh, my God. That's from 60.
You say, oh, no. One of those, oh, no plays.
Just run to the sidelines and, you know, put a towel over your head real fast. And hope they don't see it on film.
Okay.
Yeah.
But let's go back to the offense for a second, though, because I do want to talk about Jared Goff.
Yeah.
And another kind of career day for him. And I shouldn't say kind of and qualify. Like, it was a career day for him when you throw for 355 yards, three touchdowns, no interceptions, no fumbles. And what we keep seeing from Jared Goff is that he is playing clean games. Why are you staring so intently at
this stat sheet? New York, how many completions? 14?
14 to 22.
And you're a player of the week.
Yeah.
So what's different?
You have more attempts?
Yeah, you're better this week.
Probably, yeah, definitely.
Why is he player of the week now?
Well, I don't know who was player of the week today.
Okay.
And I don't know. Matt, can you check who was player of the week? I'm sorry. I really should know this. I mean, Greg Zuerlein is NFC special teams player of the week.
Agreed. I'm just saying, if 14 completions in New York was worthy of player of the week, then what is this?
Well, maybe it was somebody
25
else.
25 of 37 with a 94-yard touchdown pass?
Hey, man, I thought it could have been Robert Woods.
Okay, fair enough.
Because
if you want to lose it to your own teammate, that makes sense. Okay.
Who we got, Matt?
Cam Newton.
Oh.
I
didn't watch Monday night.
It was a virtuoso. Yeah, it was a virtuoso performance.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
He balled out. Okay.
I'm just saying.
All right. Yeah. I was having dinner with you. That's why I didn't watch
Monday Night Football. So without that Cam Newton performance, then this should have been player of the week.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. We're setting the standard here.
Okay. The standard is the standard.
I'm just saying. Right.
Right. But what's funny, though, is that, as we mentioned, Greg Zuerlein. Zuerlein is now the sixth Rams player to win a player of the week after a game. He's technically the fifth because he's won two. But after six of the seven wins this year, the Rams have had an NFC player of the week.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting.
Like, it's been Drew Johnson, Todd Gurley, Jared Goff, Farrell Cooper, and Greg Zuerlein now twice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Usually teams with that sort of resume, you call playoff teams. Yeah. I'm just saying.
Don't call them playoff teams. Playoffs?
You can't sneak up on anybody.
I just hope we can win a game.
You can't sneak up on anybody.
The other thing you do have right now is that the Rams are leading the league in point differential and plus 134. They're 30 higher than the next team on the list.
Right now.
So, again, that tells you where things are.
Well, look, Houston showed the Rams the proper respect. They came out here and played probably their best game in 4 weeks.
Yeah.
They look better than they've looked in a long time. You know why? they're facing the Rams. I think you're going to get that out of everyone, including teams like Minnesota.
It, it sounds like kind of, you know, how in the NBA people always say the Cavs and the Warriors get teams' best shots.
Yes.
That's what that sort of
you're
sounds
moving
like
into
to me.
That arena.
Interesting.
Yes.
Well, I think people do respect the Rams, and I think you kind of have to with it being the NFL's highest scoring team and a team that's allowing 11.4 points per game. Since week 5.
Right.
So they're playing really well offensively and defensively.
Well, so far, so good. And look, the team still has to, you know, keep performing. But what the Rams are telling you, it requires your best effort on game day. If not, they will hang 50 on you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I think that's what Houston showed. I think that's what everyone else was showed. And Minnesota, like we said, is next, and they're a better football team. So this will be a true dogfight.
Absolutely. But still in that game, I think one thing we saw from that sort of, okay, Houston is giving it their best shot, is that the Rams did face some adversity, which they've not really had to do over the course of the last month. You know what I mean?
Fair, yeah.
I mean, they basically, they've not trailed in a game since the first quarter of that Jacksonville game. And even that, they were trailing for 6 minutes before the Gerald Everett shovel pass goes in 4 yards for a touchdown. So what was in, I talked to Jamon Brown, right guard, after the game, and he had said that one thing McVay had been harping on during the week was the fact that adversity is going to come up. And so even throughout that game, there was just this sense of, all right, you know, we're now facing the adversity. We knew it was going to come. All we have to do is stick together, stay the course, and we will get this fixed.
Yep.
And I think it's just another really interesting example of McVay having the pulse of his team so well, you know? Because if you're bringing up adversity knowing that adversity is going to come up, and it's the NFL, it's inevitable, but just the fact that that was sort of a theme of the week.
Yeah.
And now you go into this game, and some bad stuff happens in the first half, and you could have been trailing by at least 10-6, if not 14-6, if not for Mark Barron's interception. Then you come into halftime and you, it really, really was. And then you come into halftime and you solve things, and then things start getting going.
I'll give you $1,000 if you can catch one of those.
What he did?
Yeah, from that distance.
Okay, all right. Here's the thing about this play, and Matt and I did,
we'll calibrate it to your vertical. But that was at the top of his vertical.
No, it was an outstanding catch. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, yeah. I want to see if you can make that catch.
I can't do that. I can't
jump
that high.
You won't even try. Look at you. Matt, you want to try? $1,000
I'm down.
See?
$1,000
Thank you. My God, what is wrong with you?
I'm not saying
But he also didn't want to get run over by a practice squad running back for $1,000,000
I remember. I tried $1,000 Maybe I'd get him there. Just one, jump and catch it. No big deal. You're afraid of failure.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh. I'm afraid. You know I'm afraid of failure in many different aspects
Matt,
of my life.
Are you afraid of failure?
It's not really the failure that I'm afraid
of. But you're looking at the grand, what you can do with the money.
Yeah.
I could do plenty of things with a grand. I know that. I'm just saying I know I can't do it.
Oh, I think you can.
Thank you for your staunch belief in
just
me.
Just as long as we can put it on camera.
Yeah.
I'll be there.
Obviously, I'm okay with making a
ice bags and Advil.
Last night was mad real. Sun coming up 5 a.m. I wonder if they got cabs still.
Where did he just go?
I don't know. Remember Kanye. We were talking about McVay leading the team?
We were.
Wow. Anyway, go ahead.
Sunglasses and that, no?
Or do we want to go back to Mark Barron's interception?
That's where I was going to go. Thank you, Matt. All right. So anyway.
Thank you.
On that play, because we did this for All 22 this week, which you can check out on therams.com if you have not. But that play, basically, it was crossing routes, or like levels. If you know the play in Madden, you know, where you've got one guy going up and to the right at like 5 yards, another guy going up to the right, maybe 12, 15, and then another one coming over from the left on another crossing route. And he Savage threw the ball where all of three of them were intersecting. So if you look at that play, and I'm pointing this out in the video, there's just a line of Rams and Texans. And Mark Barron is the one that makes the catch.
Right.
Because they're all lined up on this hash mark. I don't understand. Like, it's not a good decision to throw that ball there.
Obviously.
It really is not.
Obviously not. Right.
Because if you just wait a second longer, then maybe somebody's going to come open. And I thought that the Rams had that play well covered in the first place, so maybe not. But that was probably the absolute worst time he could have thrown that ball.
Well, I've heard something, and I follow this through my football life and beyond. Luck favors the well-prepared.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, you're lucky that Savage decided to let it go when he did, but, I mean, Barron was prepared to make the play.
Absolutely,
yeah.
He was.
I've seen a lot of those bounce off people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or just they couldn't make the play, or somebody else makes the play,
yeah.
But it was a hell of a catch.
It was
a hell of a catch.
Definitely, and we've seen Barron make some actually really good plays this year.
Mm-hmm.
He was going through that hand injury earlier in the season. That was going on in London when he intercepted, I guess that was Drew Stanton,
mm-hmm.
at the end of the first half in that game. Now is a new career high with 3 interceptions on the season.
How about that? Remember when we were like biting our nails when he missed all of preseason?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How do we feel now?
We feel pretty good, probably.
I would say so.
And you know what? McVay keeps saying it. Credit to head trainer Reggie Scott and then head strength and conditioning coach Ted Rath for the way that these guys have put guys on a plan to make sure that they stay healthy throughout the year.
And thank you to Mark Barron, too. See? Not just the trainers. It's the guy that's doing the work. Again, you don't want to give Robert Woods his credit. Now you're taking all the credit away from Mark Barron.
I don't think
Mark
I was
Barron,
doing
you worked
that.
Your butt off.
That
you've earned it.
I don't think I was doing
Miles
that.
Is a tough critic.
I just don't think. That's not what I thought I was doing.
8 catches, is that 171 yards, and it's a good day.
I said really, really good day,
good
at
day.
Least.
It's a great
I
day.
I had at least 2 to 3 reallys in there. But I want to talk about McVay a little bit more and the accountability thing because there was a quote that stood out to me in his press conference on Monday, and we're going to do a new segment called Reading where I read this McVay quote because I think it illustrates
serious?
What?
You're going to read? Okay, go ahead.
What?
You're going to read this?
Yeah.
In your own voice.
Is that okay?
Yeah. You're not going to try to sound like McVay.
No.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
I'm not a very good impressionist.
Okay. I thought it was like bad lip reading or something, but go ahead.
No. Right. But what he was talking about was how the offense started slow. I mean, the offense mm-hmm. had 131 yards in the first half and then got to 443, which, man, I did this math and now I don't have it in front of me. And now it is 312 yards in the second half. I even noted, good thing I did the math in pre-production on my notes, and then I didn't look at it when I was saying it out loud.
That's explosive.
Wow. Yes.
Wow.
It is explosive. And so that's why, I mean, it starts with that 94-yard mm-hmm. touchdown pass. But anyway, McVay said this. He said, it starts with me. I made some bad decisions with some of the selections of the play calls when we might not have been efficient on a first down. So second and 10, you're taking some negative runs, or you get a first down and you run a toss crack to Clowney and it ends up being a negative 7-yard play or after a gain for a first down. That's where you look at yourself as a play caller and you say, well, we didn't get into a rhythm, but did you really allow your players to get into a rhythm when you're exposing us to some negative plays like that? That probably aren't the best decisions. They aren't the best decisions on my part when you go back and you look at it. So, again, McVay has said this before, that he is self-critical because that's the way he wants his players to look at things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you doing everything that you can to make sure that we're being successful?
True.
And I think when he says stuff like that publicly, and the Rams, again, won this game 33-7, I think it says a lot about the culture of this team and where it is right now.
No doubt. And there's also coach speak, too. You know, he's taking the heat for his players. That's the way it goes. But I bet he doesn't see guys. He doesn't see names. I bet he just sees targets and opportunities. So, you know, Clowney made some plays, so he takes it upon himself and says, it's my fault. Well,
mm-hmm.
it takes all the heat off your guys, doesn't
mm-hmm.
it? Yeah, I mean, I'm sure some of those plays broke. Running the same play as at Clowney, you know?
I mean, when he says you run a toss crack to Clowney, I was thinking in the press box, why are you running a toss crack to Clowney? And so when he says that and he takes that accountability, it's not just, hey, this player should have made the block. I probably shouldn't have asked him to make that block.
But you'd run a crack to a left defensive end plenty of times, right?
Yeah.
But since he made the play, he becomes Clowney.
But he makes the play because he's thought of as a really, really good player. And you can't say he did not wreck the game for the Rams offense over the first, you know, most of the first 2 quarters.
But if you run that same crack at Clowney and it works, then what do you say? Would you say no one runs a crack at Clowney? It's happened.
I know it's happened, but I think... You're like derailing my point here.
What is your point?
The point is that McVay sets the tone of accountability.
Yes, he's very good at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's very, very good at that. He will always point the finger at himself first.
Right.
That is the mark of a great coach.
Yes.
Period. End of story.
Okay.
Yes.
So does you just keep hating on my topics?
I'm not hating on your topics.
You do. You did it last week.
I did not.
Really? You hated on it at the beginning of this podcast.
You were jumping so far ahead, and you've got a group of players coming in this week to your home, your stadium.
Yes.
Yes. You were talking about something that was going to happen down the road, weren't you?
I was not talking about something that was happening down the road. Okay. The Goff Wentz discussion from last week was about where those two players were a year into their careers. That's what that was. Exactly.
You would remind. No, I'm not going to say that.
What?
Never mind. Never mind. We'll move on.
No, I want to know.
No, I can't.
The audience wants to know.
Because I'll be throwing somebody under the bus, and I won't do that.
Throwing who under the bus? Not me.
That would be telling. See, I'm not going to. No, not you. Not you.
Interesting.
Move on.
We can talk about this off the air.
Off the air. Yes.
Yeah. Because now I'm actually
intrigued.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued.
You should be.
Okay. This is a weird episode. I feel like. Do you feel like this episode's been weird, Matt?
I'm just getting ready for Minnesota.
You too.
I don't know, man. I'm just out here trying to make everybody happy. I don't want to pick sides.
You're good.
All right. Well, then let's turn into Minnesota.
Go for it.
Since we're out here trying to talk about Minnesota. What was interesting today is that head coach Mike Zimmer did announce that Case Keenum will start this week over Teddy Bridgewater, who is now back. And I think it is a really... well. Before we talk about Case, I think it's a really, really good story of Teddy Bridgewater being able to come back from that horrific injury that he suffered last year.
I wish we could have seen it.
Do you?
Well, I mean, I heard about it. I didn't see it. I just know how bad it was and what he had to do to come back.
But, right.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I'm happy to have that guy back and actually competing because what you heard coming out of Minnesota... well, he may never play football again.
Right.
And here we are, you know, he's got a chance to, you know, not only get back on the field, he may start at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's fascinating. Absolutely. Especially Bradford is still there, but he's on IR.
He's on IR now.
I would never have guessed that Bridgewater would have a chance to come back and play this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and that he would be replacing Case Keenum instead of Sam Bradford. And that quarterback situation, that quarterback room right now is probably really interesting to be in because you have three players who have shown that they can play at a starting caliber level in this league right now.
Right.
In Keenum, Bridgewater, and Sam Bradford. Obviously, not all of them are completely healthy. But, you know, heading into this offseason, and that's a really long time away, but it's just a sort of fascinating dynamic, I think, right now.
If they were all healthy and you started training camp, I think it would Bradford, Bridgewater, and then Keenum.
Yeah, I think
Bradford Bridgewater would compete for that number one job.
Yes, I think that's fair.
Yeah,
to say.
So if Bridgewater were 100%, if he looked great right now, why not turn it over to him right now?
Because you're winning. You're on a 5-game winning streak.
Maybe he needs more time to get back up to speed. But the way Case Keenum played last week, outside of the two picks that he threw, I mean, you score 35 points. That's not bad.
No, it's not bad at all. Yeah. And they actually scored 38.
Oh, 38 points. That's not bad.
Yeah, it's even better.
Not bad at all. Right. That wins for you.
Yes, exactly. And Case Keenum has played very, very well for the Minnesota Vikings this year. He's completing about 65% of his passes. Has just under 2,000 yards passing, 11 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. And obviously, this could be the Case Keenum revenge game after what we saw from him last season and going back, I guess, into 2015 as well.
Yeah.
Now he is going to play his former team.
You know, funny. Guys like Case Keenum, it's starting to go that way for him. Josh McCown, I mean, you've bounced around a few times. Are there really revenge games at this point?
I mean, he's only played, but he's...
Or is it just I'm happy to be lining up and playing?
I think with Keenum, it's probably the latter. But, I mean, it's not like Keenum has played for that many teams.
True.
Like he bounced around, but he bounced around from Houston to Los Angeles, St. Louis first, then Houston to Los Angeles and blah, blah, blah.
To Minnesota.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, right,
now
right.
He's in Minnesota.
Yeah.
So... This is a team, and he was replaced by a quarterback who is now performing at a level that I think everybody would have expected out of a number one overall pick. So it's not like you can say, I don't get why they replaced me at this point. You know what I mean?
Interesting. I mean, but as soon as Jared Goff was selected, you knew your time was limited.
Right, and yeah. he acknowledged that many times last year.
But the way he's played, and I think he's with the right coordinator in Pat Shurmur.
Yeah.
He just gets the best out of the quarterbacks that are playing for him. And if you watch Case Keenum the way he's playing, his footwork, top-notch. Mm-hmm. He's doing things that Jared Goff's doing here.
Right.
Rolling to his left, throwing dimes back across his body, looking good. Looking like he's done it forever, mm-hmm. because he has. He's always been a good passer. He's been a great college quarterback. He was a good starter here for as long as it lasted. And he's got a better offense than he had last season in Minnesota.
No question.
And he's making it go. So, yeah, look, best team on game day, best quarterback on game day. I can't wait to see this.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. What do you think about Pat Shurmur's offensive scheme, just generally? Because he's a guy you're familiar with,
yeah.
because he was with the Rams, mm-hmm. and he was the first coordinator for Ooh. Sam Bradford.
It's funny, man. I mean, when you talk about football history and just Ram history, what would have happened had he stayed for Sam Bradford's second year?
And not gone to Cleveland
not
and
taken
gone
that
on
head
to be the head coach there?
Because
yeah.
Sam Bradford had a hell of a rookie year. Rookie of the year.
Yeah, he was.
That year. I mean, you went from 1-15 to 7-9, and then he leaves. And
right.
everything changes. So, good coordinator. What I do notice and what I picked up when he was here is he creates a lot of conversation on defense. With a lot of personnel, different personnel groupings, a lot of shifts, a lot of motions. There's a lot going on that you have to worry about. And then, like with Sean McVay, he'll change tempo.
Right.
So he's given you a lot to think about and a lot to worry about, and then boom, the ball's by it.
Yeah.
When he has a dominant run game and a dominant running back, that offense is a nightmare.
Yeah.
And they're doing pretty good running the football now with a good
O-line.
And Case Keenum is making them pay on play action. So the same thing the Rams do to people, Minnesota does to people. Just a little more physical and brutal.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you brought up their running game, and they don't have Dalvin Cook right now because mm-hmm. he tore that ACL. But I think Latavius Murray is doing a really nice job of still being that consistent running back that they probably need for Case Keenum to be as effective as he has.
Oh, I agree. They have what I call a heavy offensive line. I don't mean in terms of weight. You don't see a lot of fat bodies, 340-pound guys.
Uh-huh.
They're all around, 310. But they play heavy. When it's run, they show run.
Yeah.
They don't care. Stop it.
Yeah.
When it's pass, they show pass.
Mm-hmm.
They're confident in what they do, and they like to block on angles. And you won't see them, without Dalvin Cook, beating too many people to the pylons or around the edges.
Right.
They're just coming up the gut. They're mm-hmm. slamming you up the middle. And they get you to buy it, and then they hit you with play action, and it always seems to work.
Yeah, it does. But the other thing that they've got is two really good young wide receivers on the outside, and talking about Adam Thielen and then also mm-hmm. Stephon Diggs. And
Woo-hoo.
Thielen last week was just outstanding
yeah.
for the Vikings against Washington. He had 8 receptions, 166 yards, and a touchdown long of 49 there. But his story, I think, is interesting because comes out of Minnesota State. He's an undrafted guy. And now over the last few years, he just steadily got better. Last year, pretty breakout season for him. Nice 69 receptions for 967 yards. And now this year, he's got 56 catches for 793 yards already. So I think that he's on his way to a career year.
When you play Madden, are there just certain guys, whatever team you pick, or the team that you pick,
okay.
that you just feel comfortable with throwing the ball to?
Oh, yeah, like if you have the Falcons, you keep throwing the Julio Jones.
You just kind of have a feel for where he's going to be,
yeah.
no matter what happens.
Yeah, right? Well, he also can, do the aggressive catch.
Well, yeah, he can make bad quarterback great.
Gronk was another
yeah.
one of those guys in Madden, yes.
But last week, it just seems like Case Keenum and Thielen were on the same page.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just had a great feel for one another, and he was putting the ball in great spots, and he was going up and getting it. So, tremendous. What he did to that secondary, yeah, mega roll Sherman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, he should send that to that locker room because that's what he was doing all over the field, all on you. Yes, yeah, and it just kept getting worse and worse. Yeah, mega roll.
Mega
roll. Yeah, yeah, and you're going to need it.
mega roll Sherman.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I thought you said Admiral Sherman.
No, Sherman.
Now I understand what
two-ply.
You're saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I get it.
All over the field.
All
on you. Yes. Oh, yeah.
That's disgusting.
And that's what it was. That's what it was disgusting. Oh, my God.
So gross.
Oh, my God.
The other one, Stephon Diggs, though.
Yes.
I've been impressed with him since he came out of Maryland, and as a rookie, he made a pretty big impact on that team, if you remember back in 2015. But now, 2017, he's been healthy the whole season. He actually has not been. He's missed one game. I knew that. But what he's done this year has been really impressive, I think, still with Case Keenum, especially as the quarterback. He and Keenum looked like they were on the same page, too. Early in that game, there was a nice deep ball that Keenum threw down the right side, and Diggs was able to kind of lay out and grab it.
Man beater, yeah. Like Hopkins, you know, here's a guy that can just take your guy and, you know, tie him in knots.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when it comes to that situation, that situational, you know, football, when it's man coverage and they need to make a play and they just turn him loose, we're going to him.
Right.
So, you've got problems. So if you don't get pressure on any quarterback, on Case Keenum in particular, he's going to make you pay.
Yes.
Yes. Thielen will too, but on a consistent basis, this guy's going to make you pay.
Well, what do we know about Case Keenum? I mean, that if he has time and can get out of the pocket and do things like that, he can make things happen. We've seen that before.
Oh, yeah. The one thing about Case that we do know is he hasn't grown. He's still the same height. I mean, some of these passes are still getting knocked back in his face.
Right.
So his launch point isn't going to change.
Yeah.
It's going to be where it is, and he's going to have to buy time sometimes because he's not the biggest guy in the world. So, but even if you move him off his spot, he's still dangerous.
He can beat you.
Right.
I remember thinking, watching the Vikings game against the Browns that they played in London the week after we were there, that sometimes they don't necessarily ask Case Keenum to do too much. And that's probably the best way that they can get the most out of him, if that makes sense.
Right. I mean, they do. I mean, he's got a lot to do, like Jared Goff here. He's directing traffic pre-snap.
Right.
Come here, move here, do this, do that, and then get the ball out fast. And his footwork is great, getting the ball out. You know, like, same plays. This is funny, not to dump on your guys, but a similar play, or, you know, everybody in the league runs similar stuff, right?
Yes, so you watch so much.
Case Keenum execute a receiver screen, flips it out, ball's out, they gain yards. I watched DeShone Kizer do the same thing, and it's just a little bit off, and the timing's off.
Right.
Throws it to the wrong spot, now your advantage is gone. Instead of a 15-yard gain, it's three or maybe a loss.
Mm-hmm.
So he's doing a lot of things right, even if it doesn't look like they're not asking him to do that much.
I think they're asking him to play within himself.
Oh yeah,
that
I like. That, yeah,
that's
yeah.
more what I, or less yeah, what yeah. I'm saying is that, you know, you're not asking him to, I don't know. You're trying to stay in these manageable situations in terms of down and distance.
Yeah.
Where Case Keenum can drop back quickly and get rid of the ball pretty quickly. And I definitely anticipate that they would do that this week against the Rams.
They don't ask him to overcome 3rd and 22.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's smart.
Yes.
Yeah, I wouldn't ask too many quarterbacks to overcome 3rd and 22.
That aren't named like Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady.
Or 3rd and 33 that goes for 52 and a touchdown.
Hey,
you're all fired.
Sometimes that.
You're all fired.
Sometimes that happens, man.
Everybody pursuing the football in blue, keep running.
Just keep running. Running out of the stadium.
Yes, take your pads off, keep running.
Yeah. What do you see from Minnesota defensively?
Oh, my God. Big, strong, fast, they hit. Yeah. I mean... Everything?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're a good defense.
Yeah, oh my God.
Mike Zimmer coaches them very well. He's been a good defensive guy for a very long time in this league, and that's continued.
I would love to see their practices. I like the way their O-line plays. Bunch of smart guys. Bunch of captains. When you go and look at their history, they're all ex-captains. You know, captain of the football team. And they're all on the offensive line.
Uh-huh.
And they play physical. And then you watch the defensive line and how they play. They play physical.
Yeah.
Practice must be fun, but... I do like, no matter what scheme they see defensively, that front four, you could tie a rope between all four of them. They just don't give ground.
Hmm.
And there's no separation in technique. You're going to have to really slam the ball through there to make something happen. You've heard me talk about vertical seams.
Yeah.
That's where one guy gets too far upfield and one guy gets trapped in the line of scrimmage and there's a vertical seam for the running back to get out. You don't see that with Minnesota at all. No, no, no.
Hmm.
Yeah, they keep everything flat. They force everything out and... They've got linebackers to catch up to you from anywhere. So they're really good and disciplined.
Well, these two UCLA guys, Barr and Kendricks, I mean, we all know what they're capable of because they're very fast and they're very, very physical. What do you think the Rams have to do to sort of combat that aspect?
Funny, we were talking about this, man. For me, it comes back to Todd Gurley again.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely out of the backfield. making something happen. Just in the normal course of this offense, he's going to catch a few out of the backfield and make something happen. But traditionally, I mean, you're going to have to go in there and battle.
Yeah.
Yeah, and try to drag some of these guys through the middle because it's only going to open them up for play action. That, when I see people like Pittsburgh having success and beating Minnesota, mm-hmm. Or anybody that's had Washington having success in spurts against that defense, it's all been off play action,
right,
getting them to collapse. And that's the only way to do that is to run the ball effectively, to force those guys into that phone booth so you can make plays. If not, they think they can stop you with seven, and mm-hmm. then you've got no chance.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're going to have to run the ball effectively early. It may not be 100 yards or breaking big runs, but they've got to believe you're on the cusp of breaking one to get the play action going.
Okay. That's interesting. I mean, the one thing they're going to have back, one player they should have back, I should say, is Everson Griffin, star defensive end. He missed last week's game against Washington with a foot injury, and you know that may or may not have had something to do with the fact that Kirk Cousins was able to get off as many passes as he was, throw for 327 yards and a touchdown as they scored 30. But Griffin right now has 10 sacks and had a sack in each of the Vikings' first 8 games, at least one.
Oof.
So
yeah,
that tells you, you let him get going, you could have a long day.
It's pain in a three-point stance. That's what's coming off the edge. Nothing but pain,
yeah.
and not just for the quarterback, for the guy trying to block him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, his technique is good,
yeah.
Very very good. He's very fast, very mm-hmm. athletic, but his want to it outsizes anything he does. His want to get there,
yeah,
outsizes any move he throws at you. It's going to be a fight
right.
for you. You're just not going to shut him down for one play, two plays, three plays in a row and think he's going to stop and quit. No. He's going to keep coming.
Now, do they move him around a bit? Do they keep him on one side? What are they
doing? No, they got Robeson on the other side, who's a great left end. They've got a lot of good players that he's a right defensive end, and that's where he's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
If he does come from a different angle than that right end, that means he looped around.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got the athleticism to get you from there, which means I can line up outside of Andrew Whitworth and beat you around Sullivan to the quarterback.
Yeah.
On a 5-step.
Oof.
Yeah, that's how fast you are.
Oof.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's relentless.
Yeah.
He's about as relentless as they come.
Yeah. What do you think of this sort of coaching matchup? Because, again, the Vikings played Washington last week, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that means they're sort of scheming against what is relatively a very similar offense this week than they were last week. And for McVay, he's going to be, you know, seeing the same stuff that
yeah.
Washington ran last week, similar offensive scheme that he runs here in L.A., and taking a look at that and how that might translate against the Vikings defense.
Well, look, that's up to Wade Phillips and how they practice. Look, every offense has a tell. You know, either situationally or personnel groups, there's going to be some stuff they're giving away. But getting beat with your eyes is going to be big. That's why the play action works.
Right.
If you're looking too far in the backfield versus your keys. Like, for instance, Case Keenum turns his back to the defense.
Uh-huh.
And he sticks the ball out, which tells the defense, run, run, run. Okay, but right in front of him is an offensive line that's standing up, which means that's play action.
Yeah.
So your first reaction on a run is to step forward. But if you're really reading your key told you, back out.
Yeah.
So it's up to this coach to rep that and get them to understand what those tells are.
Mm-hmm.
And that just takes all the magic away from that offense, if you can do that.
Yeah.
There's nowhere to go with the football. If he sticks it out and pulls it back and he turns around and those linebackers are right in that zone, like Mark Barron,
yeah.
you're going to throw a pick.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, especially if you're just doing it off, if you're just playing by rote. Do the play fake, turn around, and just fire it. Oh, my God, I didn't see him. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah, so if you're reading your keys and you're really dialed into what they do, it just takes all the magic away from that offense.
But I feel like we're talking about two different things. Like, I'm saying the Rams and Washington's offense are similar.
Yeah.
So, like, but from a
defense, I thought you were talking about Minnesota.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, because you got the like Jay Gruden and Sean McVay connection.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I see where you're going.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I guess I wasn't.
That's okay.
But so from the Vikings standpoint, you know, you're looking
Vikings
at basically
D.
the same. Yeah, Vikings D is looking at basically the same offense.
I see what you're saying.
And the Rams offense is sort of maybe, I don't know, looking at itself in some ways against the Vikings last week.
You're going to take what works.
Yeah.
What worked, and probably if you look at the stat sheet or watch on tape, whatever happened on in the game, even if it didn't work, Sean McVay may see something in that play that, hey, we can we can hit this here. And maybe John Gruden, or not John Gruden, Jay Gruden was going to come back to that and the game wouldn't allow it, but there's some things you can take away from it. But remember, Minnesota's going to be faster for two reasons. One, they're at home. Mm-hmm. It's going to be raucous. They're going to have crowd noise. Number two, it's a similar offense, so your muscle memory, you're going to play that much faster.
Right.
Yeah, all the stuff you practice for Washington, you're going to practice for L.A.
Yes.
So you're going to be just a little bit faster.
Probably.
But with Sean McVay seeing you and how you react to things, he might be a step ahead of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's, I think, one of the, the fun chess matches.
Oh, yeah.
This is going to be our second time, technically, in this new stadium, U.S. Bank Stadium, last year.
Oh, yeah.
Did you like, what do you think of the stadium?
I thought it was cool. Yeah. Outside, weird.
It was a little weird because it sort of affects, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like
what is that?
UFO.
I haven't even seen it.
You haven't seen
this
it?
Will be my first time.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's coming with us.
It looks like one of those uncut diamonds.
Oh, yeah, that's a good call.
That's what it looks like,
yeah,
right, on the
and
outside.
It just, like, affects the skyline. It's, it's sort of weird. But the one thing that I remember distinctly from that stadium, aside from it being a pretty nice, it's a nice place, and I liked I can never remember if it's EFTE or ETFE, but it's that clear sort of glass roof. And that's what is going to be on the new Rams Stadium, but it's basically over half of the it's over half of the roof, so that you get that feel of kind of being outside, even though you're in an indoor space. But the thing I distinctly remember is that when Minnesota scored a touchdown in that game, that preseason game, Week 4 last year in 2016, it was one of the first times they'd ever done anything in that stadium, right? But there were basically explosions. There were five explosions and like boom, 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 boom. And then they started blasting Let's Go Crazy. And the lights just went in and out, on and off. And I'll tell you, the first time it happened, I cowered. I went, whoa.
I remember.
Hands above my head, like really scared.
Did we lose Prince by then?
Yes.
Okay, because I wonder, was that all connected, maybe?
I sort of feel like it was.
It could have been. But yeah, I mean, it reminded me of being like inside that Speed Racer movie.
I don't know that movie, but...
You ever seen Speed Racer?
Oh, my dad used to watch Speed Racer all the time.
The movie.
New one?
Yeah.
No,
there was a movie they made about it, and they said it was like giving people seizures because it was just... the same people that did the Matrix did it.
Oh, okay.
And it was just like really, really, like really lights and sounds and everything.
Yeah.
But when they did score, just the lights and everything that was going on, I kind of got dizzy.
It was a lot.
Yeah, it was a lot going on.
Have been worse down on the field than it was in the press box.
Yeah,
it was just like, boom, 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 boom.
Whoa.
Let's go crazy.
Yeah.
Which
it was cool.
A fantastic song.
Yeah, it was cool.
R.I.P. Prince, but yeah. I kind of look forward to going to Minnesota. Minnesota's it's a fun place.
Minneapolis,
the Twin Cities.
Yeah, I liked being indoors better than being at the Golden Gophers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
their
being
stadium,
outdoors.
Yeah. And feel like we were in 15.
It just seemed like a breeze was coming right through. Yeah, it was just wow.
Oh, the Rams were also on the shaded side.
Right.
So that side was really, it was freezing
it was
from what
horrible.
I remember people saying.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, there was some sun over there. I can't imagine that how cold that Seattle playoff game that year must have been at
cold.
That stadium.
Did LaMarcus knock out Bridgewater?
Yeah,
wasn't that the whole deal? Okay,
yes, that was that game.
Okay.
And I will never forget, LaMarcus talking about how I would never intentionally hurt Teddy because he knows him.
Yeah,
he's like, our parents are friends. Like, I would never intentionally do that.
Right.
Things happen.
A bear would never intentionally maul you. You just happen to look like food. Yeah.
Jeez,
Will
man.
Will Fuller.
That, I guess Will Fuller knows, too.
That's his
that
house.
Game also was where Greg Zuerlein, I think, set the franchise record for longest field goal.
Oh, right. Was it there?
Back in 15.
Okay.
This is the overtime loss that the Rams had in November up there in Minnesota.
Yeah. Another one they had. Anyway, okay.
Yes. But now the Rams are 7-2, and they could be 8-2 with a victory. And if they win this game, it'd be the first time getting to 500 at least since 2006.
I agree. See, I'm not hating.
What do you mean?
I'm agreeing with you now. Now you made me feel bad.
That's a fact. Like, I don't
know. I
know.
I'm agreeing with you.
Thank you for agreeing with a fact.
You're right. I'm agreeing with
facts
you.
Facts don't lie.
I'm just going to shake my head.
Yeah.
Okay.
Single most important thing the Rams need to do to win this weekend?
Take care of the ball.
Yes.
Yeah, you're on the road.
Yep.
Take care of the football. I mean, and not just the I guess the people that we know. Todd Gurley.
Mm-hmm.
Dunbar, whoever's carrying the football, and Jared Goff. I'm talking special teams, too. Take care of the football. You cannot lose it. You cannot give them the advantage of takeaways on the road because they're going to capitalize. So take care of the football, and You know, don't hurt yourself. I think you're good enough to compete and beat just about anybody left on your schedule, including these guys.
Yep.
But you have to play your best game.
Absolutely. All right, guys. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's edition of Between the Horns, the game.
Again. You're yelling.
Am I really yelling?
You're yelling again.
I don't feel like I'm yelling.
Am I
right
hating
now.
Again?
Yes, you're hating because you won't let me close the show.
Go ahead, close the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for tuning in to this edition
again.
Of Between the Horns, and I guess I'll just talk a little quieter.
There you go.
Is this better? I'll use my NPR voice if I'm going to end the show like that.
The game is at 10 o'clock this weekend. It'll be on Fox. For my producer, Matt, for DeMarco Farr, I'm Miles Simmons. We'll see you next week.
171 is a good day.
Great day.